your person. If I can get the big picture and kind of work backwards to where I'm at and kind of know what's ahead and things like that. You know, when I was in school, I learned a lot of principles, a lot of big ideas, a lot of methods. And I didn't really know what worked and what didn't. And I didn't really know what the future held, if this was just a bunch of interesting information or if this, you know, if this could carry through. And I, as I looked at older people, I saw some inconsistencies sometimes. And it seems like reality sits in. You know, they say college students are real idealistic, and then you get older and you realize that, you know, you really can't change the world. You really can't do all the things you dreamed of. And kind of reality sets in. Would you, Kyle, would you find a couple of chairs? We'll take care of you. Okay? So the purpose of this workshop is to give you my perspective. Okay? Now I'm just turned 34 years old. I've basically been seeking God for a while. Okay? Basically since college, since my college days. And I've tried to really look at people's lives who have made it over the long haul. I know what's happened in my life. Okay? And I've over the past several months, I've really tried to develop a life perspective, and I thought a workshop that would help students think through the big picture of their life, okay, would be helpful. So that's kind of the focus. Does that make sense? Now, I'll do three things. First of all, I'm going to give you a little personal testimony and kind of bring you up to date on what's happened in my life. Second, we're going to go through this handout. And then third, I'm gonna entertain some questions that you write down. Okay? Now let me mention three questions that I'm gonna have you just discuss with one another in just a minute. And then I'll have you write down a question. I'm gonna ask you, what are your fears about the future? Okay, what are your fears about the future when you think of your whole life? Okay? Then I'm gonna ask you, what are your aspirations? What are your dreams at this point? Okay? You may be like the fellow who said, you know, the 18-year-old that said, what do you want to be? And he said, 19. You know, I'm just trying to survive. It's that, you know, when Mike Wells put the minute up there, you thought, that's where I'm at. You know, I'm just right here, and I'm not even thinking about the next minute. But if you think about, or you may have some really big ideas of how you want your life to count for eternity or something. The third thing is, what are you confused about? What seems ambiguous and unclear about this, about a disciple-making lifestyle over the long haul of your life? Okay? Okay. Now, your group questions that I want you to write down and turn into me. And if you just have a little piece of paper or something. And I've got some blank sheets here if anyone. Christy, would you give one of those to anybody that needs one? And I may not be able to answer all of these, but I'm going to look through them and I'll try to choose ones that I think would be helpful for the whole group. But I'd like everybody to write one down if you don't mind. Okay. Now, in your group question, think about some question you have about disciple making over your lifetime. Or maybe it's something on right now. How do I make this decision to take the next step? Or something like that. Or is there something that's confusing or ambiguous to you about the long haul picture, about the big picture of your life? Oh, right. Thank you, Kyle. Is that enough information to help you think through a question? So think about a question that would have to do with long haul Christianity. Maybe it has to do with knowing God's will for your life or something like that. Or can you make it without a mate or whatever? I'm going to give you just a minute to do that. Okay. If you're done, what I'd like you to do is I kind of want to get you thinking. And the only way I know to get college students thinking in this kind of context is to get you to talk to someone by you. And that'll kind of help clarify your ideas. Now, this isn't an attempt to put you on the spot. It's just an attempt to get you thinking, okay? And what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you in a minute to, for the benefit of the group, to share some of the things that different ones of you say. Now, part of my attempt in this whole thing is to make this a workshop instead of a lecture. You know how a lot of times workshops are usually lectures?
And I'm really trying to make this a workshop, which means I don't want to talk for an hour, but I want it to be a dialogue. And I think much of what you say will be what will be interesting to the rest of the group. It's not a pool your ignorance time, but I do want you to think through, you know, your own life. And then later on in the application time, I have a couple of questions just to try to help you make application to think about this. Okay, so fears about the future, your aspirations, and confusion. FAC, fears, aspirations, and confusion. Okay, what seems ambiguous or unclear to you at this point about the long haul of your life? And what I'd like you to do is just turn to a person beside you. See if you can, you know, maybe three of you would get together, two or three, and just kind of brainstorm on that a little bit. Okay? So just go ahead and do that when you're ready. I'm going to finish writing my verse. Yeah, bet. Kev Shin. Kevin. And we go way back. We go way back. Thank you. Okay, take about another minute, 60 seconds. How are things in Plano? Good? You know, I don't know. I talked to a guy, there's a guy in my church that knows you, knows your family, went to church with you, Steve Cross. He's a heavy man, and he was divorced when he was in Plano and moved to Colorado. That's back home. But he knew your family. Do you know who he is, by any chance? He said he knew your folks and all. And I mentioned...
You know, Byron Bishop, you know, the bishop.
Yeah, sure enough, well, he did. I thought that was pretty neat. Okay. Okay, let me look. Fears, aspirations, and confusion. What are your fears about the future, your aspirations, what you're excited about, look forward to? What seems ambiguous and confusing to you at this point? Those are just questions I wanted you to talk about. Byron, would you go ahead and see if you could kind of collect those questions? Would you pass your questions to your left over this way to the end of the row, and Byron will pick them up? If you would pass those questions that you wrote down for me, that'd be great. And while you're passing them down, let's go ahead and get started now in our discussion. Okay. well, this is tough because you talk about your fears, and it's kind of like, now, how honest do I really want to be here, you know? Oh, should I do the godly fears that everyone would respect or the real ones, you know? But after Mike Wells, everybody's probably feeling real transparent and everything. You know, just kind of be real here. How messed up we all are. Okay. Okay, let's start out with fears. What are some of the things that you mentioned? Would you unfold all these Megan Ryan reels? Kind of put them all right side up and all that. Thanks. Okay. So anyway, what about fears? What are some of the things that kind of came out in the group?
Letting God control your life.
Letting lard.
Oh. Letting lard control your life. That's good. Okay. What kind of things would you say would those be? What kind of things? What's the lard in life? You all think? Were the things that the lard that you that may, that, you know, you see controlling people's lives?
Yeah.
What's that?
Materialism.
Okay.
Money problems.
Okay. Money problems. Just financial bondage. Okay. Anybody else? Were you thinking of anything specific there?
Well, in that case, I perceived it as greediness.
Greediness. Okay, greediness. Okay. What else did you all say? Pardon? Okay, sticking with God's plan. Okay. All right.
One time I like that, and God revealing himself what he wants from me, and then he gives me the next day. And then on the road, I really regret it. And, you know, he's saying, I wish I just had it there when he's dead. And not...
Okay, good. Someone else?
Well, my husband, you know, they're always telling you, in 10 years, 50% of you won't be
Okay.
There's a lot like that. You know, I fear that one day there's going to be something happen, or a week or something, that I won't walk with the Lord, or that a lot of times I want to do something through in a semester. I want to start and get something done, and then I procrastinate, and then I end up wasting it. Well, there's some goals that I have in life that I don't want to do in my life. And then,
That's good. Okay. That's good. That's healthy. That's healthy. You know, Paul said in 2 Corinthians 9:27, you know, in 24 through 27, he talks about, do you not know that all the runners in a race run in order to get the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. You know, he talks about how he beats his body and makes it his slave so that after, you know, so that, and then he says, so that after, so that, he basically says, so that I won't become a castaway. Or he says, so that, you know, after running hard, I won't be disqualified from the race, you know, or disqualified from the prize. That's something you see in Paul. And if you're not careful, you can misinterpret that. You can misinterpret it to think that what Paul is communicating is you can't have assurance of salvation. Okay? That you're going to be, you know, you won't be able to make it to heaven or something. It has nothing to do with that. He's talking about effective service. And Paul had a healthy respect for his weaknesses. He had a healthy respect for his own lack of ability to really follow hard after God. And I, you know, a lot of you know Gene War, a businessman in Oklahoma City, a man who has counted for God over the long haul of his life in a big way. And you know, Gene will tell you, he said, I run scared every day. I run scared every day. You know, and you think, wait a minute, can't God give him enough power to, you know, to where he can just kind of get on top of things? Well, you know, he's just familiar with the verse that says, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Okay? Is that 2 Corinthians 10:12? I think, something like that, I believe. But, you know, he's got that healthy respect. So don't feel like that's bad if you have these thoughts. Now, you know, you can carry it too far. It can be this paralyzing anxiety that basically what it is more of a self-focus. You're kind of worried about you, you know, and, you know, you're just kind of self-centered and worried about you and your thing. And you don't even see other people in needs out there because you're so worried about making a mistake and you're paralyzed. Okay? That you can carry it too far. But there's nothing wrong with that healthy sense. Okay? I know, you know, Billy Graham, another man whose life has counted over the long haul. Billy Graham won't even get in an elevator if a woman gets in an elevator and like, say he gets in an elevator, he'll step out. He won't even ride up the building alone in an elevator with a woman. Now, he's not afraid he's going to tear her clothes off or something like that. That's not a problem. But he just wants to make sure the enemy doesn't have any chance, you know, to thwart his ministry. Another mighty man of God, and I don't remember his name. I don't remember which guy this is, but he was getting in a buggy. And he said, now, sir, is this horse tame? He said, oh, yes. Is this horse tame? Has this horse ever gotten away or anything? No, never has. I mean, he was so cautious about even getting in a buggy about the kind of horse. And they got in that buggy and that horse took off like a scared rabbit. And they nearly had a fatal accident that killed this man of God because his life was counting over the long haul. The greater your life, the more your life is counting for God, the more God is working through you, the greater target you are for the enemy. And a wise man, a wise woman recognizes that, okay? A wise person recognizes that and protects himself, okay? You know, this thing used to be real. I used to be, my reaction to this, like when I was in college, was like, hey, come on, that's ridiculous. This is a bit extreme, isn't it, you know? But the older I've gotten, the more I've seen the truth of that, okay? The idea of needing to guard your heart. Because people are going down and they're like, you know, they're going down. The enemy, that an enemy snagged them somewhere, okay, down the road. The enemy got them, okay? So there's that healthy sense. I know that's a long comment for that, but anyway. Were there any other fears that anyone would mention? Let's go on to aspirations. What are your dreams? In one or two sentences, just something you dream. It may not be your biggest dream of all, but just pop off some things. Dreaming of a good night's sleep. No.
Enjoying what you do in life.
Okay, enjoying what you do in life. Okay. Okay. You'll make a difference in the lives of people around you. Okay? Someone else? Okay. Raise a godly family. Okay. Anybody want a pretty wife? Handsome husband? No. Oh. Oh, I tell you what. Tomorrow skiing? Dreaming of skiing. White mountains. Okay? Okay, we'll move on. We're getting a little bit of interaction here, but that's okay. Probably God wants me to talk a lot, you know, because He knows how great this material is. What about what are you confused about? Are there any kind of things that you're thinking about? I know probably your questions had to do with that. But would anyone share anything that they talked about? Pick on the person who talked to you. What did they say? Anybody mention anything? Okay, how does it all fit together? Okay. That's what I hope this conference is kind of about, is how does it all fit together? And I'm kind of just basing it on my own experience and then talking to people about this. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on then. Let's go to the Lord in a word of prayer. Lord, I pray, you know I have prayed, just that you really would honor the time. And I pray you would give clarity. And I know that the folks in the room have just heard a long message by Mike, and then after the one last night. And if they're like me, they feel like they've already heard much more than they can assimilate. Lord, I pray there'd be one thing they could take out of this conference that would really be an encouragement to them in the future. I pray you would guide our time together, Lord. And I pray you just open minds now and give me wisdom, Lord. Speak truth. Thank you, Father. In Jesus' name, amen. Let me start off by pointing to this verse, Hebrews 11:6. And without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him. I thought about what can I tie this conference together with, you know, if I could say one thing. And if I thought of one verse that I'd like to focus on and hammer on, it's this verse right here. Let me tell you about my own spiritual pilgrimage. And just as it relates to this verse, as I began to grow in college and then after college, I think this has been kind of a theme of my life as I look back. And it's the idea that I really do want to believe God for great things in my life. Okay, believe God for great things. Dawson Trotman wrote, there's a little booklet you can get in the bookstore downstairs. He's the founder of the Navigators, purchased his property. He wrote a little booklet, and you can get the tape at the tape library at the BSU, called The Need of the Hour. And in the booklet, The Need of the Hour, basically what's communicated is that the thing that we really lack today is not knowledge. It is not knowledge. We don't need any more information. I mean, information is good and it's helpful, but it's not the total solution. But the need of the hour for people to believe God to do great things in their life. One of the best examples, first people that I know along that line is Max Barnett. And, you know, kind of, you know, pick up what you can from his life and just talk to people who know him about things. But I had the privilege of being on staff with him 5 years, and he just constantly believes God for big things. You know, like this conference, when we're planning this, you know, he first thought about, wouldn't it be great to get students away for a week, you know, for an experience in the mountains. And they tried the thing where they do ministry trip and they go for an evangelism trip. They were another part of Colorado 1 year, and it just seemed like what students really needed was to really be fed and have some time to meet God, and you know, with the busyness and the hustle and the bustle. And he thought about Glen Eyrie, but it was an impossibility. And people told him that. You know, people said, "Now, Max, you know, that's a great thought. First of all, it's too expensive. I mean, students can't afford to go to the Glen Eyrie. You know, that's just an impossibility. Second of all, getting there, transportation would be real hard. And, you know, renting buses would be prohibitive as far as cost-wise. Third of all, they wouldn't want, even if they did have the money, they wouldn't want to spend their break in that way. You know? I mean, they just wouldn't do it. You couldn't sell them on it. You know, it's just totally impossible. And yet, year after year, I mean, you know, it just happens by the grace of God, and things are worked through. But basically, in so many different areas, you know, he has just, he believes God for big things. And I want this verse to characterize my life. You know, Matthew, in Matthew 13, verse 58, is a verse that, you know, you talk about running scared. It's a verse that I keep before me constantly. And it says, "And he did not do many things there because of their unbelief." He did not do many things there because of their unbelief. And I think, God, may that never be said from my life. Now, I realize that old Bobby Pruitt isn't the sharpest guy in the world. You know, I'm average intelligence. I am not. I'm not even probably the average student that goes to OU intelligence, or the average at CU or something like that. I'm regular average intelligence. And I know that, and that's okay. You know, that's the way God made me. He gave me my IQ. But I just think, and then that's not a problem, but I just think, oh God, I don't want to not trust you for great things in my life. I want to believe you. See, I have a big God. And what happens in and through my life is dependent on I'm limited. I want to be limited by God, not limited by myself. If I was limited by myself, I'd be in trouble. Okay? But I want to be limited by God. And I think if I look at my life, you know, since college, basically, I believe I've been on track. I really think I've been on track thus far. And God has taught hard lessons. But it's a struggle. But I believe, as best as possible, I'm trying to make my life limited by God and not by myself and my own weakness. So this verse just stands so strong to me. Well, let me just quickly tell you a little bit about my life. Some of you are familiar with it more than you want to be. Others of you don't know me. Maybe this is the first time you saw me. But my dad was in the military. I grew up in a military home. We traveled around the country and went different places. We had a pretty good home life. My mother and father were Christians. And I grew up believing in Jesus just kind of like you believe in any great historical figure. And I prayed and I did the kind of the routines that people do. And that's great. I think that's the way you should raise your kids. My life proceeded pretty normally till I got into high school. And I had a natural pattern in junior high and high school of living one way at school and living another way around my family and church. It was just kind of a natural pattern.
pattern I had. I have a real adventurous spirit. And that's part of how this verse fit in. See, life, the Christian life to me is an adventure. It's a tremendous adventure. And so, you know, it's kind of like you're going to step out on faith and believe God for great things. And it's kind of scary because you're out there and that pumps me up. You know, some people, that curls them back, that throws them back. But that really pumps me up. But my adventurous spirit got me in a lot of trouble. I was very much a pleasure seeker. And then with girls, I basically, you know, I grew up watching Elvis Presley movies. And I kind of thought that that's, and I also had an older sister that probably had, she had a lot more boyfriends than she had girlfriends. And I think with the model of my older sister, and then kind of what I saw on the screen and things like that, I just thought that the thing that made you happy was dating and having a pretty girl. And so I just, from the outset, from second grade, I was very interested in girls, and I pursued them, and that was a lot, you know, the day I got my license when I turned 16, I went on my first date by myself with a girl because it's like, now I can do it. It's my birthday, got my license today, so let's go, you know. That caused some problems. That's just one of the areas that, you know, God had to work with me in. But there was that desire at that point, and kind of a value system. I looked for security, I think, from the person I was dating. In eighth grade, my father very suddenly divorced my mother for another woman, and he had integrity had snared him, and I'll mention that just a little bit later. But integrity had snared him. I think he'd flirted around with sin and the air of purity in his life. And one day his heart went out, okay, to another person. And he would have never thought that would have happened. And when my dad left, I remember us crying at the door, you know, oh, Daddy, don't go. And we were all crying. He was crying too. I mean, he said, you know, my only sin, he said, my greatest sin is that I fell in love with two women. Because he really loved my mother. And in fact, he didn't actually divorce my mother in eighth grade. He divorced her after I was out of high school, my freshman year. But he had moved out in eighth grade. And his heart went out to this other person because he didn't guard it, you see. He didn't guard his heart. It wreaked terrible devastation in his own life personally. And God has done some rebuilding in his life. But, you know, it's kind of like David. It's never quite the same again, you know, once something like that happens. He had been a fine Christian, a deacon, and things like that. But my dad was a strong authoritarian in our family. So when he took off, man, I was free. My mother had to go back to work, and I think it was like my birthday when I turned 14, I got my motorcycle. You know, it was the day I was able to get a motorcycle, I got one. And so my mother was working, she was busy, and she wasn't used to having to control me either. And that you combine a motorcycle with an adventure spirit and you remove the authoritarian figure from your life. And that's where I was. And I was also, I think it really hurt me emotionally what had happened with my parents. And so, there's a lot of, I continued this pattern. I changed churches from the church my family went to because I thought, well, if I go to this other church, then I don't really have to even go there if I don't want to. You know, I told my folks, well, God's really led me to this other church. Then I could go when I wanted, or I could get up. I had to go to church, you know. But I could get up and get dressed and go somewhere else. I didn't have to go there. And my life was pretty well characterized by appearance on the one hand as being a kind of a Christian kid, and then what I was really like. Okay, and I was a product of my past and of my rebellious nature. Then I had a terrible motorcycle accident when I was graduating from high school that put me in the hospital. I was just about to graduate, I had aspirations of going to the Air Force Academy. I had a nomination there and the other academies as well. And couldn't take my physical aptitude exam because I was in the hospital all laid up, and I was really messed up. And God really, that was an experience if I look to in my life where God just kind of hit me in the face with the 2x4 to get my attention, that is good in a way I needed it. It was a great stroke of love that He allowed to happen in my life. And God really used it to get my attention, and that's what it took. God did just what it took. So when my friends were out going out and partying at graduation, I remember we had a guy speak at our baccalaureate, and it's like, what are you giving your life to? What are you living for? And it all came together then. And I realized I was very two-faced. And you know, the transition between high school and college was pretty hard. So I went home and cried my eyes out on my bed. I remember, found out later, the guy who spoke at our baccalaureate was Josh McDowell. I didn't know that at the time. But did a good job. God really used it in my life. Then as I went to college, I still had the thing with girls. You know, if I was at the OUBSU or something, I'd be the guy who's interested in the girls and probably dating around and things like that. Not the more mature guys, you know, kind of. I think there's some truth to that. But I still look for security there. But I began to really grow and just kind of in the atmosphere I was in. And my life began going uphill. And I really, it was in college that I
lordship statement in some form or another with a commitment to the Great Commission. The simplest life objective is the theme of the Navigators, to know Him and make Him known. That's, if you want to boil it down in its essence, you expand that, and you can expand that to include things that, you know, as much as God has told you personally. But to know God, okay, and to make Him known. Both that relational aspect with God and then the serving, being part of what God's doing in the world. Does that make sense? There are good examples of life objective kinds of things around the OUBSU. And you can get tapes on life objective and things like that. And a life objective really does help frame your life and help you see a purpose where you're going. But I think that's a key thing to get in college. Another thing there, C, is determination to marry a growing Christian with similar vision. The reason I put that in there is because that's one of the ones that'll knock you out. It really will, because, you know, if you have a big old pipe, I'm not an engineer, but if it goes down to this little narrow pipe like this or something, and then it gets big again like that, you can't get as much water across this pipe as if it's whole all the way. Can you understand that? Is that simple enough? And when you marry someone, basically, you kind of join pipes together, okay? And you'll be limited by the size pipe you join with, okay? I know one thing sticks in my mind is Carolyn Teague. This is for you guys. Carolyn Teague said, she says, no, it wasn't Carolyn Teague. It was there's another guy that used to be on staff at the OUBSU when Max came. But anyway, she said, you know, I think every guy ought to marry above himself spiritually and stuff. The reason is because there's so many great godly women out there. And I mean, you know, you might as well. I thought, boy, that's great. That's pretty good. Girls, you get to trust God. I know that's hard, but God will be faithful. He really will be faithful. But it's such a big thing in the area of marriage as a possibility. And you know, you may not even get married. In our day and age, we basically have bought into the idea that not getting married is, you know, God has ripped you off if you don't get married. We've bought into that, even in Christian circles, I think. We've bought into that. And it's hard. We believe Jesus really isn't enough and that we've got to. You know, and that's an important thing. And you know, you see basically the pattern of marriage and things like that. But God doesn't necessarily have that for everyone. And I know that's hard. But if that's what God has for you, it's not bad, you see. It's good. It's the best. And I think God has that for most people. But it's wrong. It's wrong. I don't think God wants everybody married. He just doesn't. But if you do get married, you need to keep your standards very, very high. I'm watching the lives of some people now to see if they keep their standards high. And they're moving on little, have gone to OU and things like that, and they're not married. It'll be interesting to just see how they keep their standards. And best I can tell, gals, God really is faithful in the lives of people, you know, who don't settle for second best. The third thing there is fellowship with God. That's pretty self-explanatory. In a person of the Word, and then practice in ministry skills. Those are very simple, but I think these are the essence of what you need to get in your college years. And there's all these other things that you're being taught and trained in and all this stuff. And those are good things. But I just am trying to kind of give you a perspective of what I feel like is the heart of it. Okay? Now, post-college. Post-college time is kind of a test run. It's for refinement, for a better understanding of your long-term direction. It's great to get working world experience there, as it's mentioned. That's really helpful. Now, some people will go ahead and pursue their education. Like if they feel like the Lord wants them to go on and get a master's or a PhD or something, they'll press right on in school. And that's really, I think that's really helpful and good, because a spouse, especially if it's a man, going to school while they're married, the Lord really has that for some people, and that's fine. But boy, I tell you what, it's good to get your education knocked out all at the front end if possible, because it'll make it easier in your life. I think generally that's a better pattern. The one exception is if you think you'll be going into the ministry. If you think you might be going into the ministry, full-time Christian ministry, so to speak, as opposed to the business world or something, I think it's helpful to get a couple of years' experience somehow in the working world before you go into seminary, because it'll help you see what you need to learn in seminary. And seminary is kind of more the same when it comes to education. It's just more education. You know, it's not really like Falls Creek and things like that. It's more studies. There's academic pressure. You know, it's just more. You have to memorize information and spit it back on the test. And there's some other good things, but basically it's more education. And if you can focus and know what you want from seminary, and getting out in the work world helps you to know that. Okay? And then just firming up your conviction, polishing your character, continued ministry skills. Look at the danger there. It says, the danger, not tied in with like-hearted people. That's probably the greatest danger, I think, that you face as you graduate from college and go out into the working world, is just the idea that, and you know, we're back to 2 Corinthians 6:14, don't be unequally yoked to unbelievers. One thing I realize as I've worked with college students over the years, and I even know what I was like, is that you don't have it all together when you graduate from college. You know, you have not arrived spiritually. There are a whole bunch of other things for you to learn, okay? And if you can go someplace where there's some vision, where there's some training, where you can be polished and continue to be in kind of a hothouse environment, but really not in a college situation anymore, but rather in the world, that's tremendously helpful. It can spur you on. Now, you know, God may lead you back to your hometown or something, but you're going to have to fight to find that, you know, find those like-hearted people that are really going on with God. Then it mentions a social Christianity. They're just kind of settling down for whatever's in the old hometown, compromising, and a worldly value system. Okay, look at your 30s and beyond. Continually discerning God's leading in your career and ministry, growth in marriage, family life, ministry and career. If Lord has you to get married, that's pretty much where it's at. Okay? See there, being a Christian. There are some character qualities there that just talk about who you are. One of the things I've seen is that who you are as a Christian, who you are is more important than what you do as a believer. I plan on talking about each one of these in detail, and I'm just not going to due to time. Okay, so I'm gonna press on here. But let me just say that those things there, integrity, purity, compassion, faith and vision, and humility and dependencies are absolute key things on what you need to be, okay, as you go on in your life and the person that you are. Okay, part two, obstacles, rewards, and costs of disciple making. Let's talk about some obstacles just a minute. And what I want to do, I want to mention what a few have been for me. And then I want to mention, and I talked with some others about this and kind of some things that they said. Okay. And this is just kind of to give you a perspective. You don't need to necessarily write these down, but just listen just a minute. Here's some obstacles. One is ambiguity, for me, is ambiguity in understanding specific tasks to pursue. Okay? There's a multitude of demands and possible directions for me to take at any particular moment in my ministry. And you know, you're kind of thinking through all these possibilities. And it can be difficult. And along with that, you know, you second guess your direction, kind of where you're going. When I came to OU, I remember I was sitting, I had to raise support for the first time, and boy, that was tough, because when I was in high school and college, I paid my own way through college. I was one of these guys that was working all the time and going to school too, you know, taking 18 hours and working 20 hours a week or more, and wouldn't take any money from my parents and things like that. And I was a self-made man, just like my dad, kind of. I had my freedom when I was 14 on my motorcycle, you know, I mean, I didn't need anybody. That was kind of what I was, and part of the price of that was not getting that training in college like I needed, you see, spiritual training. But I opted out for materialistic things and such. But when I was raising support to go to OU, that was really hard. But I put a verse up in front of me as I was making calls, and it was Luke 9:62. Anybody know that verse, Luke 9:62? But no one, after putting his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. And I put that back. God had really led me, and you know, I really felt like I needed, you know, God had, I'd made my decision to go to the University of Oklahoma. And when I went there, I hadn't even raised my support there. Normally you have to raise your support and then you come on staff. But boy, they needed someone to plug in pretty quick. So I went on staff and then I raised my support. So I already made the decision and I didn't even know if this was possible. So it was really a step of faith. And it was the idea of, I can't second guess my direction. God has told me to do this, and now I need to move on. Okay? And I think that verse, Luke 9:62, can really help you. Okay? There comes a time when you need to make a decision. Okay, about your life. And we're going to talk about that. But when it comes time to make a decision, you make the decision and you move on, because obstacles are going to come up after you make your decision, and you can't second guess your decision. Another thing, and I think it was brought out, was just that, for me, obstacles are to the tyranny of the unimportant and tyranny of the urgent. All the things, the junk, the lard that gets in your way, all the stuff. I read in USA Today the other day about information overload, you know, and all the stuff you have to read. I mean, if I read just the stuff I got from the Southern Baptist, I would spend my whole time reading just that. I don't know what's going on in the world or anything. It's just in these circles, but you get all these period. You're inundated with literature. And you have to learn, you know, what envelope's not even to open, is to throw in the trash can. If they say, you know, if it's not a 25-cent stamp, you can probably chunk it. But you may want to open it and look at it before you chunk it. But I, you know, you just realize your time is too valuable to get too inundated with information. Another thing I fell into there is the idea that I could do everything. I had to realize I couldn't do everything. You know, some people, they'll talk about their super high capacity people, and they can do everything. Somehow that's kind of, they work it, you know, about 1,000 horsepower. I'm about a 3, you know. But, you know, they don't sleep at night. They just stay up and read it and catch up with everything. And they're always showing these books to you that they read and saying, have you read this? You know, you think, I didn't read my Bible today, much less this book. They just read this novel last night, and they're keeping up with all this literature, what's coming out and things like that. Man, I finally learned I can't do that. You know, I'm the regular person that I talked about. I can do some things, and I do, but I can't do everything. And you have to realize what you need to do, what God's called you to do, and what you can't do. Those are the basic things. Let me mention just a few other things that were mentioned, not by me. As far as obstacles, physical limitations, such as weaknesses that appear as weaknesses to my peers by society in general. Another thing is financial limitations. Being placed by God in situations which has developed my character via strain and trials. Okay, heard a lot about that this morning, I know. Okay, costs. Let me just say about costs. If you will get this verse in your mind, it will help you more than you can ever imagine. John 21:22. Does anyone know John 21:22? It says, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. And it's the idea of, in that context, Peter says, Jesus says to Peter, basically, if you look at the passage, he says, Peter, when you're old, you're going to get killed. Someone's going to kill you. They're going to wipe you out. And you're going to go where they don't want you to go. And you're going to die. And so Peter goes, what about this man? And points over to John, you know, and says, what about him? And he says, hey, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. I'm talking about you, Peter, because the cost you pay will be different. Your life will be different than everyone else's. And the biggest thing we do is we compare ourselves with others and what God has for us. I mean, okay, you get your legs knocked off and you're in a wheelchair for life, okay? Your life will probably look a little different than the Christian athlete out here who's running, okay? But that's okay. God has a plan for you. And your tendency is to look over there and say, what about them? You know, well, you know what? And John was probably the only disciple that did remain. I mean, John ended up, far as we know, he had a peaceful death on the island of Patmos after he wrote the greatest revelation of all time, you know, which is the book of Revelation. And that was God's plan for him. I mean, he was fit perfectly into God's plan. But that wasn't. God really was glorified in Peter's life in a very, very different way. Memorize that verse. Memorize John 21:22. Other costs, time, sleep, success in the world. I need to just press on here. In fact, I just need to, let me just go down to rewards, and I need to finish up. Verses you're probably well familiar with, but in rewards, it's Galatians 6:7 says, you know, a person's going to sow what he reaps, reap what he sows. A person is going to reap what they sow. And Galatians 6:9 says, let us not lose heart in doing weary, for in due time we shall reap. Okay? Let's not lose heart in doing good. In due time we shall reap if we don't grow weary. And somehow we've just got to trust God, okay, in that level. As you move down the road of your lives, laying down the years one by one, your lives may look quite different from each other. Okay? The people in this room, your lives may look quite different. You know, this one's a teacher in her hometown where she grew up, but it's God's place for her. Maybe she has a 7th grade Sunday school class that she's working with, you know, and she's really being faithful there. And you know, God cares about 7th grade Sunday school girls in a hometown that you came from. I mean, God really cares about those people. I like that where Mike Wells, God sent him all the way over to China to talk to the least person in China. Francis Schaeffer has a book, No Small Peoples, No Small Places. And, you know, when you hear the big picture of world strategy and all that sort of thing, I think that's good. But God loves everybody. Okay. And the main thing is, you know, what is God, where does God want you? My basic approach to life, one of the ways I determine God's direction is find out what God's doing in the world and join Him. You know, go there and do that. But God won't lead everybody that way. He just won't. Okay? That one is a business person in a major metro area. Maybe he's part of a church planning team. And maybe he gives heavily to his buddies in ministry. Okay? And maybe that's just what God has him do. Here's another one who majored in psychology, has had three career changes, and now contemplates seminary and ministry. And this person is kind of a mercy-oriented person. He's always helping people in crisis situation, and he has the gift of listening, you know, probably. It's a great gift. And he can be square right where God has him. Okay, two more are overseas. One's a career missionary, and another is with an American company abroad, kind of tagged into a team. Quite different circumstances, but you dig down in their lives and you find the same thing beneath the surface. And here's what you find. You find a heart for God. The person has a heart for God, okay? It's reflected by the time they spend with the Master. Yeah. And even that, one has a rock steady 6:30 a.m. style. And one has is constantly fighting for the time because they put people as a priority, you know, or maybe it's a wife that has little ones, and there you have to kind of give their lives to these little ones, and it's very hard to get that time. They're striving for personal growth, would be the second thing. They've just got a hunger to grow and know God more. The ministry sphere in which they give themselves, God has seemed to let them to. They have a ministry somewhere. They understand and are committed to the Great Commission. It may be through giving more. It may be through things right there in the local area. Probably both. And then lastly, they continue to seek God's direction, not their pleasures, okay, in life. They're committed to a greater purpose. The thing I challenge you to do is be a person who is not limited. Don't allow your life to be limited, okay, by your lack of faith to step out and trust God. At this point in my life, as far as I've gone, you know, I have not seen God let anyone down yet. I mean, I really haven't. And He's been very faithful to me in very concrete ways. Now, I counted the cost. You know, before I moved to Boulder. And I was willing to take what came, and I didn't know what God was going to do. But God really was faithful. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him. Well, let me tell you, these questions you wrote down are going to really help me in the next seminar that I'm going to do on this, okay? As I budget my time better, and maybe we are able to get started too, closer to time. And I apologize for not being able to talk through the questions, and I apologize for not being able to have some discussion. But, boy, what can I say? Let's go to the Lord in a word of prayer. Father, I really pray that later on in the week, when students in the room now have opportunity to think through their application from what they've learned the whole week, Lord, that they really would consider the fact and make a determination that people won't say, be able to say of their lives over the long haul that He did not do many miracles there because of their unbelief. That they will be people who have stepped out in faith, each in their own realm, and trusted You for big, for mighty things and for big things in their lives. Lord, I believe the Christian life is the greatest adventure anyone could possibly have. And our lives are framed with purpose.
And Lord, there are death blows, but even those blows help us to grow and be conformed to your image, and they give life. So Lord, I just pray there would be a wholehearted commitment and we would be limited by your strength. Thank you for the time, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.